Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So today we have a really exciting, founder that is joining us. You know, we're going to be talking about all the good stuff that you all like to hear, building, scaling, everything. And again, our guest today, he's done it, a bunch of times. And I think that now, he's going to be telling us too about what he's up to. He's now riding a rocket ship, but we're going to let him tell us about this. But again, brace yourself for a very inspiring conversation. So without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Rob Bearden. Welcome to the show.
Hey, I'm a huge fan of the show. Thanks for having me and I can't wait to get into the discussion. And thank you for the opportunity to be with you today.
Amazing. So why don't we get going here with giving us a walk through memory lane. How was life growing up in Atlanta?
And it was great. It was a very grounding experience and, very transformational, and just watching everything from the Braves flourish to seeing tech come on the scene in the early days, and then I ended up building a lot of my career here in Atlanta with Oracle in the very early days and seeing the whole ERP and application world explode right here in the Fortune 500s that were headquartered in the Southeast. And then made my way to doing a lot of work in a couple of companies that were headquartered on the West Coast and doing a East Coast, West Coast commute almost every week. And now full circle back to founding and building and scaling a company back here in my hometown of Atlanta, Georgia. So it's been a lot of fun to see that evolution happen.
That's amazing. Now, in your case, you were alluding to it right after school. You got into the whole data world and the hardware world. And also the real software job that you got, was in Oracle. And that was even before they had reached $1 billion in revenue, which is really spectacular. I mean, you started there as an individual contributor and then regional manager and then all the way up to VP. So what did you learn there from climbing the ladder, the corporate ladder?
It was a phenomenal experience being able to be part of Oracle in the early days. That was my first software company job, second job out of school, but first real software company job. As you said, it was before they had even pierced the $1 billion in revenue model. And what it taught us was how you construct process. And through every part of the business. And that's what Ray Lane and Jeff Henley had done so well, is how you operationalize every line of business, how you wire between strategy and execution, and how you deliver that through very surgical processes across every line of business, and how to go through a construction of process through inspection and very focused on detail. And that's what Oracle, I think, really did a great job of teaching us. And, it was a pleasure to be and very fortunate to be able to be part of those early days of Oracle and watching it double every year for 6, 7, 8 years while I was there. And just, learned a lot and met a lot of great people and watched, I think, as much as anything, the transformation of tech happened from being very, on-prem to moving to the ERP and next generation of applications, and how businesses were transforming their model with technology generally and specifically with Oracle ERP and applications, and how they were transforming their business models enabled by technology. And watching that happen taught me a lot.
And also, it took you some time, to really going at it as a co-founder, but you did some really interesting transitions, and some of those were really being very heavy on the operational side, whether it was as a COO or as president. I mean, some of the things that you did was I2 Technologies, where you were there basically helping them and on that journey of taking the company public or being the COO of which had a $650 million exit, or even SpringSource, where you were president too, and that was scaled and sold for $650 million to VMware. I guess out of all these experiences, all these transitions, what was, you know, that that common theme and that common thread, you know, from one to another?
Yeah, they were all very different to some degree and have had a lot of commonality at the at core parts of overlap. And I too was, you know, one of the very first very specific business applications, and it was really the leader in automating supply chain. And you know, built a great company, got to $1 billion in revenue at the height. It was a $52 billion market cap, 20% operating margin, and just a model of scale and efficiency. And I learned a lot from the board, from the leaders, from Sanjeev, and Greg. That we really you had to learn in that model how to establish your correct and accurate positioning into the app's consumption model and what your best practice use cases and value props were, and how to go accurately position those value props within those use cases that fit by industry. And it was a very surgical process, and watching how the tech was built for very problem specific outcomes, productized, and then put into, you know, arguably one of the, at the time, the best sales machines on planet Earth. You know, there was a lot of great lessons learned, a lot of benefits that came out of that. And we applied some of those basics, but then we had to transform when we went into the JBoss world. And that tech was completely open source, completely free. And then contrast to i2 and Oracle, which were very much obviously perpetual license driven models. You know, in the world of JBoss, it was all free, consume it all, and we had to figure out where the value proposition was and how to create value in an open source model that you could monetize and scale through a consumption model. And you know, that took a few cycles. The team really figured it out at JBoss, scaled the revenue, and I think was very transformational in how you go make open source become enterprise viable and do it in a way where it can be consumed at scale for mission critical applications, and the enterprise would pay at scale for it, almost in parity with its proprietary competitors, and to go build a scalable business model around that. And we applied those same principles at SpringSource and had, you know, similar results, similar outcomes, but both using, you know, the transformation to open source and the different and moving to a subscription model as you monetize versus the perpetual license model. So there was a lot of transformation that was happening, both in how the tech was consumed and used and the commercial models and how it was monetized.
Well, the exit of JBoss was pretty spectacular too. I mean, we're talking about $650 million. So 2005 as well. That's remarkable. What do you think were some of the key ingredients there for being able to accomplish such a nice outcome?
Well, I think it was a testament to Mark Fleury's vision around the tech and what the capability of the tech was and the power of the open source model. And then I think Red Hat really saw the opportunity to take that, and I would suggest that was the early days and the very beginning of what a product-led growth model actually was, because of course they had RHEL and, you know, had done a phenomenal job making the Linux operating model work at scale for enterprise applications, made the whole ecosystem work around it, we're monetizing at scale. And then with its acquisition of JBoss, we're able to go to the adjacent space, apply their principles of building, deploying open source and monetizing it into the adjacent spaces and parts of the enterprise that they were already had relationships and monetization and enterprise agreements in. And I would suggest that was the first foundational steps to a PLG model. And, you know, they executed it extraordinarily well from everything from the acquisition, the integration, the applying it into their build deploy model from an engineering standpoint, and then rolling it into a commercial model that drove monetization at scale. And, you know, they were able to replicate that in a bunch of other places. And obviously, ultimately, you know, had a, you know, $32 billion outcome with IBM that I think has gone extraordinarily well for both sides. So I think it was very foundational in operationalizing open source generally into enterprise and commercial models that set a standard that allowed enterprises to adopt open source for mission critical use cases and applications for the last 10, 15, 20 years.
So it sounds like just like you did here on the transaction with JBoss, which was sold to Red Hat, you know, as we were talking for $650 million. Sounds like that $650 million also is a common theme, because then you went to SpringSource, where you were president there, and that was scaled also and sold to VMware also for $650 million as well. Now, that was the immediate step that needed to be taken before you got going as an entrepreneur. So tell us about what were the immediate steps that needed to happen for you to end up founding what ended up becoming your first company, Hortonworks?
Well, you know, after the SpringSource acquisition, we looked at the enterprise landscape and what were the biggest problems that they were trying to solve. And this was obviously, you know, at the biggest advent of cloud and its beginning of really becoming mainstream and very validated for being able to run mission critical use cases and applications, and the IoT of things were in full force. And we were seeing with Web 2.0 all of the data exhaust that was being generated. And I think by definition, the enterprise understood the value of being able to capture all of the data about the transactions, the devices. And the challenge was how to capture that, bring it under management, and get value back from it. And how do you leverage new transformational business models with it? And I think the underlying thesis that a lot of enterprises had was, if we can bring all of this disparate data under management at the right total cost of ownership, we can create very transformational, high-value business models to do things in our business models that we couldn't do before. We can create more visibility to our customers. We can have more velocity with our supply chain. We can do better in product design and accelerate our product build and delivery cycles, whether it be tech or hard goods or consumer goods. And it was very applicable in B2B and B2C models. But the challenge was there wasn't a platform that could really bring it under management with a TCO that could be leveraged to next generation platform and business models. And we saw what Yahoo was doing with Hadoop, and how Yahoo had leveraged Hadoop to be the platform to manage across all their content, across all their properties, and to have leveraged that content into a clickstream revenue model that manifested itself in the form of advertising. But the common denominator was data at scale, And in order to have data at scale with high velocity of capture and refresh, it required a new operating platform that they had to go build. They built it in an open source community. And that was the manifestation of Hadoop in open source. And we saw that there was a great opportunity to actually partner with Yahoo and to bring the core of Hadoop into a commercial company along with the brain trust. It was about 22 core individuals at Yahoo that were building an open source, the core of Hadoop, and to bring them into that commercial entity with the goal of making it a commercial platform, but do it all in open source and make the big data market function around Hadoop, leveraging that platform. And that's how Horton launched. And it was launched as a partnership with Yahoo, spinning those core, that core team of 22 engineers into Hortonworks, with the goal of, through the open source community, making Hadoop an enterprise viable data platform. And we did that in collaboration with Cloudera Legacy, and you know, collectively assembled 4,000 or 5,000 customers that were doing, you know, mission critical applications and use cases at scale, largely in regulated industries. And we ultimately saw a path to accelerate the market, drive a lot of efficiencies and synergies, both in terms of expense and revenue, by combining the companies. And, you know, 4 or 5 years, and after taking both companies public, we put them together and, you know, and proved that thesis ultimately right. And, you know, at the end of that integration, we had about a quarter, almost a third of the world's data under management on the Hadoop platform between the two customer bases. It generated a little over $1 billion of revenue, about $960 million of ARR, and became a very profitable company. And more importantly, was just incredibly transformational. And how enterprises were able to transform their operating and business models to better serve their products, their customers, their supply chains. And, you know, and that opened up so many new opportunities across the board for how data and use case and value was constructed, leveraging data to do it.
Hey guys, so pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard. And already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on, when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of a cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com, and we would love to take a look at helping you out.
Now, one thing that is really remarkable there is, as you were saying, you know, how the two companies come together and how you ended up packaging it and going through a transaction that you led there that ended up being $5.3 billion to a private equity firm. Obviously, In the past, you were doing transactions, as we said, you know, all the way up to 650 million. But I mean, this is like the three comma club. Eh? So really spectacular, you know, like to be able to go through a transaction like that. I guess when you achieve a size of that nature, I mean, how is the transaction different from what you were used to perhaps before?
Well, yeah, just a couple of clarity points. So we did bring the two companies together, Hortonworks and Cloudera Legacy, and I remained on the board post that transaction. And you know, the management team that stayed to run the company did a great job integrating the companies, rationalizing the roadmap, rationalizing the transition from each of the legacy platforms to the new platform tech. You know, opening the aperture for many, many new kinds of use case and value drivers. And then ultimately, I did come back to as CEO of the combined company and you know, had the privilege, quite frankly, of working with that leadership team. And we got very focused on really just taking the opportunity to capture those synergies at full scale that the thesis of the combined company we felt like we could achieve. And so we got very focused in a balance between growth of ARR as well as operating margin at scale and finding the balance between those. And at the same time, doing it in a way where we could create bigger and wider value for the customer bases in the kinds of use cases that they could enable, the value levers that they had the ability now to go capture in the new platform with the new company and grow their volume of data, the use case they're driving, and quite frankly, spend more money with the company and taking advantage of the new products that the company had built. You know, and what that did was it drove the synergies to the upside on the revenue past the $1 billion mark. But with that scale, we had to become very disciplined about also delivering at scale operating margin. And we had to really go through operating margin expansion from, you know, low 20s into the 40s and 50s and become a rule of 50 company. And that's important as a company matures through its life cycle and becomes a great steward of value to its customer base. And you know, that's what the Cloudera team was very focused on. It deeply operationalized that. It had a lot of support from the board to do that. And as we did that, the private equity buyers saw that as a great opportunity for in a long tail horizon to continue to serve a very strategic customer base and an invaluable asset around data to continue to build and capture value for the customers that will continue to scale both in terms of revenue and an operating margin and free cash flow. And and they've done a good job proving that model through, you know, well past certainly my exit, and you know, continue to, you know, do great things with innovation for that customer base they serve. And so that's been cool watching them continue on with their operating model execution.
So then, as they say, once an entrepreneur, always an entrepreneur. So you know, right after this chapter, it was time to get going again. And this is your latest baby. So let's talk about what you're up to now. You know, what this next company, you know, has been as the journey, and how did the whole idea, you know, for Semaphore, you know, .ai, you know, how did that come knocking?
Yeah, I mean, I wish I were smart enough to actually know how to go through pattern recognition. But if I look back, you know, in each of the iterative loops that my career has been fortunate enough to go through, I was part of the early days of ERP, you know, very much the business app side of supply chain. And then the open source models for both JBoss and SpringSource. And then the advent of big data and cloud, Hortonworks and Cloudera. And, you know, and as we see the transformation that's happening right now across the enterprise, it's how do we leverage AI to be, again, transformational in our business models, right? Certainly, there's value drivers in particular use cases. Certainly, there's value drivers in particular line of business opportunities. But it's really at the macro of how do we leverage AI in an enterprise viable way to accelerate our business model transformation using the enabling technology that AI creates to drive more efficiency with my products, with my customers, through my supply chain, and how do I create more efficiencies, both in terms of new revenue creation that comes through that, as well as more efficiency in my operating margin and model because of how I transform my business models through my product innovation, my supply chain efficiency, and how I better serve my customer through AI. You know, and we had some pretty good points of view of where those value drivers were and the problems that needed to be solved to enable the enterprise to do it with the advent of LLMs and generative AI, leveraging data to enable it. And that's what drove the inspiration for Semaphore. And we feel like there is a time to market element that's important. And there's an opportunity to be definitional in terms of how generative AI applications are built, deployed, and managed through intelligent agents. And we saw an opportunity to accelerate how to execute on that vision and opportunity. And so we were fortunate enough to be able to bring Semaphore in its early form factor together with RoboCorp and to finance the combined entity in a way that allowed us to accelerate the great architectural decisions and work that RoboCorp had done in the automation layer with our vision for intelligent agents that we wanted to go construct to get sort of the next generation of AI business apps in motion. And we felt like the combined entity saved us literally a couple of years of build and go to market. And, you know, to many degrees, I think that thesis has proven accurate. And we've been very fortunate to have that RoboCorp team. Auntie, as its CEO, has become a founder here with us. And we've been able to leverage the great work in both the tech platform and their customer base and been able to apply our intelligent agent infrastructure with the RoboCorp planning, scheduling, automations, and control plane capabilities. And it's accelerated the use cases that the existing RoboCorp customers have been able to accomplish, as well as it's opened our aperture up much faster to a very wide audience for a number of very targeted use cases that are, you know, quick to value realization. And so seeing that model, that transformation model with the enabling technology of LLM, generative AI, with our intelligent agents is showing, you know, sort of its ability to gain traction faster than really any of the other companies that we've done before. So that's been a lot of fun to be part of.
So talk to us about raising money here, Rob, because obviously after all these incredible transactions that you've done and a hell of a resume that you have, you know, I'm sure that the investors, you know, were really, you know, not even thinking about jumping in and giving you guys a check, I'm sure. So how did you guys go about raising money here? Why did you take the money from the people that you did? And also, how much money have you raised in total?
Yeah, well, you know, we've been very, very fortunate. I specifically have been very fortunate to have had a relationship with Benchmark for over 20 years. You mentioned JBoss, SpringSource, Hortonworks, what became Cloudera. I've been fortunate enough that Peter Fenton and Benchmark have stood behind me and financed all those companies and, you know, given us awesome guidance and input and kept kept us on a very efficient path. You know, and we looked at what we were doing next, you know, began to just have great collaboration with Peter Fenton and Eric and Chet and the rest of the team and Sarah. And, you know, we began to really transpose on that AI at an enterprise level is going to manifest itself in terms of intelligent agents. And that was very much in alignment with how Naveen at Mayfield saw the market moving and how the enterprise would embrace and enable AI. And so it became a very natural alignment, a very natural fit between their vision and how their thesis of AI was going to be applied pragmatically and at scale for enterprise use case enablement, i.e. through intelligent agents. And so it just became a natural gravitational pull ultimately between Naveen, Peter, Benchmark, and Semaphore, and ultimately bringing Robocorp into that as well at the same time. It just naturally pulled itself together. And we were very fortunate to have the support of Peter and Naveen and the rest of their partners. And so we initially raised $30.5 million post acquisition of Robocorp. And we've been very efficient with the capital. We're very focused on targeted use cases within the enterprise. We've been fortunate enough to get, you know, I think the right cohort of co-dev or design partners at the right scale of enterprise who are very meticulously and surgically focused on solving very deliberate problems with agents. And it's been a great partnership working with them. And we're very close to having, you know, a handful of them. We're hopeful in production at scale with, you know, driving a lot of efficiency and accuracy in their AI application model by the end of this year. And then I think we'll really be off to the races and be able to scale from there.
Amazing. So obviously, you know, the caliber of investors that you got on board is really remarkable. And I'm sure that, you know, at the end of the day, like employees, customers, also investors, they look at the vision. So with that in mind, you know, let's say if you were to go to sleep tonight, Rob, and you wake up in a world where the vision of Semaphore is fully realized, what does that world look like?
Yeah, well, I think what the opportunity that we believe in deeply and get, you know, daily confirmation is the enterprise has to transform how they do work. And they have to be able to bring much more efficiency and accuracy in how their knowledge workers do work. And with between LLMs and generative AI through intelligent agents and the proper infrastructure to enable it, they can realize that opportunity at scale. And so I think we're going to see a world much sooner rather than later where every knowledge worker has an intelligent agent that's really up-leveling the volume, capacity, efficiency, and accuracy of the work that they do. And it's going to bring, as a result of that, not only a lot more efficiency that'll show up in things like operating margin, but I think what it's going to be able to do more importantly is transform the velocity and the kinds of applications and ultimately business models that they can go realize. And so if you think about from old world to new world, and the old world that we're just graduating from, customers wanted to bring data under management so they could make, quote, data-driven decisions, right? And they would use that data to make decisions on how they would better innovate a product or better serve a customer or get more efficiency in logistics or supply chain. And they now understand what the best-in-class outcomes or the best-in-class KPIs or what the bar is that the auditors want, need, and require them to get over. They understand the standard of work that has to happen to get a particular job function or process done. And they want to be able to transition from making data-driven decisions to actioning the work autonomously from end to end. And using intelligent agents to do that, and using humans to help them go through that reasoning process, and can be an exception manager versus a manual execution agent. And so you'll see that transition happen and that enablement happen with intelligent agents. And you'll see better, certainly, operating efficiencies and operating margins. But more importantly, you'll see better velocity of work, more accuracy of work, new kinds of applications being able to be driven for how products are built, how customers are served, how product is sold, and how supply chains are orchestrated and ultimately delivered. And it'll allow the human to do higher efficiency level kinds of work that they're not able to get to today. And so it just creates higher value and better velocity in the enterprise operating models. And, you know, and now we're going to have to think about how to manage, how to enable the life cycle of these agents and how to manage these agents at scale. And that's what the Semaphore platform's designed to do.
So let's say now I bring you back in time. Okay, so we're talking about the future, but I want to talk about the past with a lens of reflection. So I bring you back in time to that moment where you were maybe like thinking about starting your own thing, you know, right after SpringSource, you know, right before you were going at it with Hortonworks. And let's say you're able to give yourself one piece of advice for launching a business. What would that be and why, given what you know now?
Yeah, you know, I underappreciated when we started Hortonworks the importance of really knowing and understanding on one axis the business model, granularity of the business model that you want to create. On the other axis, I underappreciated the importance of having use case specific outcomes that you're trying to create for the customer, and to be able, and the lack of appreciation of not having surgical focus on what those use cases were that we were trying to enable very specifically for a customer by line of business, by persona, with a very, that was underpinned by a very specific operating and business model. And we had to feel our way, and sometimes not very eloquently, quite frankly, but because of my lack of experience at scale in those days. But learning and appreciating when you dial those things in and get them right, combined with still keeping the innovation spirit of building the next generation of tech to enable those things. And when you figure out how to balance that, then you come up with things that are very special and can go to scale. And so those were key lessons in retrospect learned post Hortonworks.
That's amazing. So Rob, for the people that are listening that would love to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so?
Yeah, anytime, happy to help if I can be in any way, shape, or form. Rob@semaphore.ai. Reach out to me anytime. I'll try to get back to you within 24 hours, and always glad to help in any way possible.
Amazing. Well, hey, Rob, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show today with us. It has been an honor.
It's been my pleasure, and I'm a huge fan of you and the show, and thanks for all you do to bring the visibility to all of us on these great topics you bring forward every week. Thank you.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening, and see you at the next episode.